How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Welcome back to Blunt Business on CannabisRia.com. We're getting ready to wrap up the year of 2025. And, you know, there's a few things we've been talking about on the program here recently that we are awaiting word as we're recording today on a possible executive order from President Trump to help further bolster and move forward the reclassification of cannabis. We'll see if that's a Christmas present coming that everybody will be happy to have in their proverbial stocking stuffer. And then, of course, the intoxicating hemp issue and the loophole being taken out, which could be extended into after November 2026. A lot of that, but one of the people that have actually spoken a lot about the areas when it comes to hemp that we talked previously back in June here on the program is back with us once again, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Edibles.com, the curated hemp marketplace launched by Edible Brands, parent company of Edible Arrangements, Thomas Winstanley. Thanks for coming back, Thomas.
Jorge, great to be here. Thanks for having me back on.
My pleasure to have you back on the program once again. So you have been still quite vocal when it comes to putting out a statement recently on the newly negotiated congressional spending bill, the CR that we heard about, which was part of the government shutdown from last month, that would federally recriminalize many hemp-derived THC products, including popular items like Delta-8 THC, which were legalized under the 2018 Farm Bill. Now, we already know what was being said, but now the statement itself, you mentioned that the White House had announced a $12 billion aid package for farmers funded by tariff revenues and delivered to the USDA's Farmer Bridge Assistance Program. Support is welcome. Many growers are grappling with the consequences of escalating trade tensions, including a roughly 30% decline in soy exports as negotiations with China drag on. But even as Washington steps in to stabilize farmers hurt by global markets, it is simultaneously undermining them at home. Buried in the continuing resolution and the minibus appropriations was the recriminalization of hemp-derived consumer products, a move that delivers a second avoidable blow to already strained producers. Now, from some people I've talked to on the program, either here on our grassroots marketing series, I had a marketing consultant to come on and say that they could still see an extension, that the loophole could just be continued on, just like the FDA hemp. The FDA has actually been handling the hemp bill. You know, they just keep kicking the can of the road. Do you feel like that might be something that will still happen, or do you feel like this is going to hold a lot?
So I think it's absolutely something that is in the cards. If you look at the timing considerations just for farmers, per se, a lot of the farmers come February are going to have to make a determination, are they going to cultivate hemp? The reason why February is kind of an interesting time frame, well, they have to make sure that they have workers cleared through visas to come be labor in the farms. Those take about 90 days for farmers to get clearance of their workforce. Once they commit to that workforce, seeds go in the ground around May, June timeframe, and then we get into the fall season in which cultivation occurs. Now, that timing sequentially for the farmers also aligns with the recriminalization. If recriminalization occurs November of 2026, those farmers will be harvesting crops that are essentially deemed useless because there is no product to then create and commercialize. So the extension that we are seeking allows for farmers to actually run one more crop cycle of hemp to be able to bridge the gap, to allow them to hit that one last cycle, to make one last, you know, run at the crops. And then that 6 month gives a buffer or whatever may come.
Let me ask you, Thomas, when it comes to, and this is maybe me playing a bit stupid here, but I have to ask that question. And I think maybe some of our listeners will get and appreciate this.
Yeah.
If you are growing the hemp, since it's the plan of hemp growers will only be allowed to go ahead and grow hemp for industrial purposes, in that time frame they have right there until November 2026, I mean, is it how much, obviously from your own background in business, is it feasible to, say, in 6 months to a year, convert what you're cultivating for hemp for industrial if you have to go ahead and make that conversion?
Likely not. Right. So industrial hemp is maybe 5 to 10% of hemp cultivation today. Most of the farmers are cultivating the hemp for commercialized CPG consumer products. So the shift of saying, okay, well, we're no longer going to allow consumer products, that knocks out 80 to 90% of hemp cultivation across the country. And then you look at the economics, you know, on the farmer side, it's about $6 billion to farmers based on hemp, 20% plus return rate on the investment of cultivating hemp. That to me is, you know, that this policy is going to hurt farmers. Like,
oh yeah,
no mincing words about it. The agriculture or the industrial application of hemp does not nearly have as much utilization today. For us to say, you know, recriminalize November of 2026, well, that's actually a really terrible time, especially when it comes to the commercialized side of consumable products. 6 month extension. Yeah, of course, for us, does that give us more room to negotiate better regulations, some form of alternative? There's no question, yes. But I think at the same time, adding an additional 6 months to let the category run, give farmers one last run at this, so then they can actually prepare in 2027 versus going from a three-month window where, you know, November is when the law recrimination came forward, and now they have 3 to 4 months to then just totally retcon their entire cultivation approach for 2026. I don't think that's in the best interest. And that subsidy, to me, is why that subsidy became, I don't know if everybody, that struck me as a very weird contradiction, where $20 billion in subsidies are going to farmers who are being hurt by tariff policies in the same way that consumers are being hurt. Separate topic. I'll leave that one aside, Jorge. But when we look at this subsidy, well, we're subsidizing something now because of self-inflicted wounds. You look at, you know, the soy exports to China, which have been virtually non-existent in the last 6 to 12 months. Farmers are hurting. We have something that is working for them. We're taking that away. We're now using taxpayer money to then bail out farmers on deficits that we are creating for them. There is something to me that economically doesn't really make a ton of sense. And I also generally, as a believer in the category, I have to say something about that because, yeah, a $20 billion subsidy going out the door to farmers, I think they're deserving of it. But I also think there's a question about why are we in a place where we have to give them a subsidy when there's $6 billion that is on the table that a 6 month extension for $6 billion, it seems like a pretty good trade off for me. And I think that's kind of where, when I look at I have to look at the industry in totality. I have to look at the full extension of the hemp supply chain, who's impacted, how the impacts land. And so that to me really stuck out.
Let me take some more from the statement that you put out there. The agricultural, you put out a bunch of stats, very important. Agricultural hemp sector is a $6.6 billion industry, offering farmers a rare advantage. Far higher margins than those of conventional commodities. You mentioned how 24% of estimated returns go for hemp, compared to 15% for corn, 8% for soybeans. High return on investment on an agricultural crop. And 65% of greenhouse grown hemp goes into the very consumer products Congress is eliminating. So the crop's value is about to evaporate. Now, in the initial, and this I'm imagining that $6.6 billion industry has gotten a lot of growth since 2018, since the hemp bill got in place.
Yeah.
The thing is, I think there's part of the semantics that's being missing here. Because I never hear enough when they talk about intoxicating hemp, they never talk about the fact it's an agricultural product and farmers are behind this. It's not their fault about the derivation of it. They're just growing it and it's being sold for what it's going to be used for, just like anything else. Why is it you feel like that, you know, with Congress putting this in, this continuing resolution and adding this caveat in, why are they missing the part about this being something that's hurting farmers, which ultimately I know the president doesn't want to go and do?
Yeah, I mean, that's, Jorge, that's a great question. I think part of what we try to do is educate that this is an American-made supply chain. I mean, this is, you know, the hemp supply chain reaches all 50 states. It is a category that is vertical in the United States entirely, which I think is very rare these days in terms of commodities and consumer packaged goods. But I think, Jorge, a lot of the challenge that we see today is there are issues with this category. And I think the issues that are constantly being gravitated towards, for good reasons too, are these products. There are products being sold out there that should not be sold.
Correct.
I think that's where the lightning rod is. But I also think that clouds a lot of the rational discussion around this is one piece of a major, this is a major kind of ecosystem that we're so heavily focused on a subset of bad actors that don't really necessarily reflect the totality of the category. And when we go and I talk to, you know, politicians and trade associations, farmers are a really key part of this. I spoke with James Comer back in September about this. Jamie Comer, you know, at a roundtable event in D.C., where farmers were present, farmers were talking about it. I think this is also why when you look at states like Kentucky, I know you had my friend Jim Higdon on recently from the Cornbread Mafia. You know, that's why you see senators from Kentucky like Rand Paul, who are passionate advocates for this category because they understand the ramifications for rural America and the cultivation side.
But now, the other part, Thomas, says that we've had FDA commissioners, three of them, in this time period of the 2018 Farm Bill, Scott Gottlieb did not do a thing with it. And obviously, we'll have to go find some work with Big Pharma. Robert Califf, no answer from him. Marty McCarry now in place. Also, no implementation of any regulations for hemp, which it would be easy. And can I go blue in the face and be a broken record? We've talked about the Cosmetics Act of 1930. You could just instill that right now. FDA could just say, listen, we've gotten all our public comment. We have done enough public hearings about this. We have done enough to go ahead and say, okay, listen, everybody had heard to the Cosmetics Act of 1930, done. Takes care of all your bad actors. Why won't they do that?
I think a lot of this comes down to, and I think this is, I look at this as kind of a microcosm for policy at large with the federal government, where FDA is an enforcement agency. Department of Agriculture is a rulemaking agency. Health and Human Services is more of a, here's the framework of rules to be made, to be implemented by FDA. And I think a lot of folks kind of take a, well, it's not necessarily my problem, our problem, it's their problem.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com. Tired of social media censorship? Frustrated by restrictions on TV, billboards, and traditional radio? CannabisRadio.com is the only platform where you can connect directly with over 1 million dedicated listeners without the limitations. Advertise your product freely to high-value, educated decision makers. Launch your unrestricted campaign today. Email Brasco, B-R-A-S-C-O, at CannabisRadio.com.
I think there's a little bit of a circuitous discussion around who has the ownership of it. I think one of the challenges that I have with the Food and Drug Administration saying these products should never have existed and they should not exist, but yet they have not necessarily led any enforcement to show contrary policy interpretation at a federal level to pursue this as a category that should not exist. If you look closely at the FDA warning letters, which there have been several of, those are very egregious outliers of what I would say probably the majority of the white hat hemp industry would agree these products don't belong anywhere near this category as we see fit. I think there is a hypocrisy inherent in that way of policing it, where you have a federal statute in the Farm Bill that says this is allowed. You have a conflicting statute in the FDA Cosmetics Act that run counter to one another, yet there is selective enforcement, which in my view gives reciprocity to say, just because you are not enforcing this side of the Cosmetic Act, you are basically saying, well, because we're not enforcing it, there's nothing wrong here. But now we are back to this regressive approach of saying, well, now it's all bad. And we've never liked it, and you shouldn't have been doing it in the first place. But I think there's a level of accountability that policymakers need to own and understand where, if this was really a major concern, this category has been running for 6 years, 7 years, and there's not been a push. And despite best efforts to create policy frameworks, none of those discussions have been had, but there's been no action around it. And it's almost like, you know, you can complain all you want about legality or illegality. What really matters is there is this robust industry that is being unfortunately downgraded and negated because of the whims of a Mitch McConnell who has been beating a drum that slipped something through in a package that we didn't really have a leg to stand on. And I think sometimes you have to own bad decisions. I think it's a bad decision that FDA hasn't done anything and allowed it to grow. I think it's a bad decision Congress has. I think at this point, law of unintended consequences doesn't really matter whether it was intentional, unintentional. It doesn't really matter, because where we are today is you're about to wipe out this thing that, instead of trying to make it work, you're saying you guys are all bad and you're doing something that we're going to make illegal again, even though I have yet to have convincing or compelling arguments that say that this is a major consumer health threat, no more than some of the other adjacent categories.
Now, let's put this out there too, Thomas. The repeat could happen with cannabis once they try to reclassify, because there's a couple ways, of course, the president could do it. He could go ahead and make the direction to HHS and DEA to go ahead and reclassify, Or he could go to the Attorney General Pam Bondi and make it where it's not, you know, an offense and take the criminality away from it. But the regulation doesn't get changed. The part is we could still have this shady gray area that doesn't get fixed either, but you could fix it also with good manufacturing practices. But totally. Nobody's talking about that.
Yeah. I mean, and this is, Jorge, it's an interesting time having been, you know, from 2018 to 2024, I was a cannabis industry guy. And I've always wanted to connect THC products to consumers in a safe, legal way. And, you know, I'm in hemp now. I was in cannabis. I will tell you, Jorge, I'm so stoked about the potential of an executive order. I have trepidation, but I am cheering on all of my cannabis industry friends who are
right off the bat, investment is going to make a change. Just the announcement caused all major cannabis stocks to go and take a spike.
Yeah, I mean, I like a big fan of the MSOs ETF. Like, yeah, it's up like $2 or $3 in the last couple of weeks. Like, that's great. Like, I'm really happy. Cannabis has been in a nuclear winter, and I am glad to finally see policy moving forward. And more importantly, I think I don't know that we'll ever get an answer on this, Jorge, but the CR going through and killing hemp, and then all of a sudden rescheduling or descheduling coming forward after that, there is something at play. I think what I'm most curious about is what is the fine print? And what does that fine print really look like in terms of interstate commerce, the Dormant Commerce Act? I'm curious about banking laws, finance. I'm curious about how quickly this can happen. I'm curious about DEA, HHS, FDA. Curious to see how this all plays out. I certainly hope it continues to move towards a more free market economy. Cannabis has been really restrictive, which has always been a druther of mine. Is it going to open up the free market economy more? Is it going to give consumers more access to it? Is THC going to take a win in 2026 after a major loss for THC?
You just pointed out the wrong thing, Thomas. That is the reason why the president wants to put the executive order. It's because he wants another sector to spike and bring the market and the economy up.
Absolutely.
That's it. Well, it's a dormant economy right now. He puts that caveat in there, and cannabis will go ahead and spike to the roof. And for those that are waiting outside in 2026, don't wait to get on the stocks. Jump on it right now, because once that executive order does go through, that's, I think, the part I think people don't even realize. Because I've been going through this year with the president, you know, coming back in the office. My income has, you know, not been the best, but my portfolio has grown exponentially.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you know, I have, you know, precious metals ETF and one that's based on the S&P 500. And those have gone skyrocket. And I can't be happier about one of the best years I ever had from that. Yeah. And that's where you really make the money, is the investment. And I think everybody else has to realize, and you know, it's always a switch around. So when it was President Biden, it's like the income was better, but the investment was flat. Now it's the other way around. And that's why I think for the industry, you know, it's that trickle down economics kind of feel to it. Okay, if the investors are coming in, then more money's going to be piled in. We'll get back to seed fund rounding and more investment like we were before. But who gets hurt at the end of it?
Well, you know, and I think you're totally right. I'm watching this and saying, look, Trump's approval numbers are way down. He is heading into a midterm election year.
Yeah.
He also does not like Mitch McConnell. You know, like, he and Mitch have never gotten along. And one of the things that I feel like hasn't necessarily surfaced in the executive branch that I have felt reverberations from, let us not forget Donald Trump signed the Farm Bill in 2018. Donald Trump deserves the gold medals for what hemp has created.
Yeah.
One of his great political adversaries, with a stroke of a pen, is taking away a $28 billion industry with 300,000 jobs across the entirety of the supply chain. There is something within there that I don't think is resolved. And that's, I think, part of where I continue to have hope for thoughtful policy in 2026 around hemp. I think the step with cannabis is a good step, but I also know Trump needs approval numbers. Yep. Trump doing something around cannabis is helpful. I think him to do something around hemp he can claim a very quick and easy victory by saying, I'm going to save him. And 300,000 jobs are going to remain. And $28 billion industry continues to grow that I have single-handedly created. He's also doing this going into a midterm election year. I will tell you, consumers, I'm now a guy of the South. Consumers in the South love hemp-derived THC products. Yeah. They are not going to be able to get, I do not think the cannabis industry is going to take root in the same way that hemp has. I think a lot of midterm elections, specifically in the South, are going to, hemp will be a topic of conversation. I hope all of those variables somehow begin to surface. And I really hope that we start to see a little bit more gravity around proximity and access to THC, hemp or cannabis derived. That's what I hope for. And I know it's got to come back to Donald Trump. I think it seems weird because Donald Trump loves to celebrate wins.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not like, I wouldn't say I'm crazy Donald Trump supporter, but I think it would be very odd to not let him take the laurels of creating one of probably what he talks about in campaign missions, which is what hemp was.
Yeah.
An American-made supply chain, farmers, manufacturers, entrepreneurs, consumers, all of that is
an important part of the reindustrialization of this country. That's what it was. Bringing more out back home. More, I do agree with that part. Here with Thomas Winstanley, Executive Vice President and General Manager of Edibles.com. We're going to be back with more with him when it comes to the intoxicating hemp issue and what he was saying on the Dales report, and just go a little more expansion on that. So we'll be back with Thomas with more questions after this. Thomas Winstanley, Executive Vice President, General Manager of Edibles.com, joins me here on Blunt Business. So what is it for the Dales report where the probable future where high-dose THC products are confined to state-regulated dispensaries while the hemp market evolves into a low-dose ingestible segment? And you were talking about the proposed 5 milligram per serving limit for hemp-derived edibles offering the least resistance politically and may act as a path forward to ensure some THC access remains federally protected. And taking from what you were saying on there, that you were saying, quote, on there, I think everything, you know, that's in the headspace, you made a point that you nobody should be remiss about the negative optics that are around saying that there's movement towards a 5 milligram serving size. And ultimately, one thing that's getting buried, like the lead that's getting buried in all this, is the point of like progressive policy at the federal level. It's going to take a lot of different shapes and sizes. And I would, you would say in a lot of ways that 5 milligrams is fairly the multitude of trade associations, not just roundtable, but you said members of a lot of trade associations. It seems to be the path that it has to be the least resistance as it relates to hemp discussion today. So take me through what you had told on that report and just the fact of why the importance, you know, if we're able to get to that 5 milligram per serving limit. And, you know, the one thing is at least it's one step into a regulated level to say, okay, here's the rules, now follow them.
Yeah. So I go back to a lot of my cannabis days. Yeah. Where when Massachusetts legalized recreational cannabis, their policy was 5 milligram serving size. I think Maine was maybe closer to 10 when they went rec. I believe New York was somewhere 5 to 10. And I think part of when we look at where we are today in terms of hemp is right now is on a path to extinction, right? Like I was telling a coworker where it's like we're driving that train right off a cliff that we can see up in the distance. So we need to do something to preserve. I think what becomes challenging in the hemp conversation, because hemp opened up so many avenues for these products to exist in shelves, whether it's vapes, flower. I mean, there's the entire portfolio of hemp products that are out there. I think where politicians are starting to develop a regulatory framework and their own education around it comes back to the two most probably frequently seen categories of products universally, which are beverages and gummies. those two products seem to be most ubiquitous in traditional retail avenues. It's also the categories that you see major operators come into the space from, a Total Wine, DoorDash, so on and so forth. And so, you know, when we go and we talk to regulators who are sympathetic to our cause, a lot of the direction has always been frame policy in a context that we can understand and help you generate support around. And the way that I look at it is, we are not quite at a point today to say, like, yeah, there's a one plant policy and it's universal THC regulation, agnostic of hemp or cannabis. Right now, I think part of where we look at what is the most likely and realistic path to get a bill or some type of protection done for the category, ingestible seem, at least from our perspective, like the best avenue to codify this category. And I know that there are a lot of people who disagree with that. And I think that's very much understandable. I know a lot of businesses who would argue with me and disagree with us. But one of the things we have to do is, I'm somebody who thinks all of this should be legal. I think THC should be readily available at convenience stores, grocery stores, dispensaries, online. I think it should all be accessible, but we're just not there yet. We have to take meaningful steps. Look how long it took for rescheduling to happen. You know, I remember conversations since 2018. Our backs are really against the wall with hemp. We need to find a path of viability that requires some concessions. And I think that's where 5 milligrams seems to me is a comfortable level. It also is a dosing that was shared with us from regulatory lawmakers. So as much as I would love to be like, yeah, upwards of 10 milligram per serving, 15 beyond, you know, in excess of 200 milligrams per container, that's not going to fly. And so you have to kind of take it back to, what is the concessionary MVP approach that we can get to at least keep this thing going? And the key for me is keep it going to then continue to build more inroads for broader policy downstream. Because right now, if we don't have anything, we're gone, you know.
Yeah.
Moratorium, 6-month moratorium, great. If we can add 18 months, amazing. Can we get a bill passed anytime soon? That would be incredible. Wine and Merkley bill just came out. It's okay. Griffith has a bill coming out. That's looking interesting. We've worked with him on some of that language. But again, I think it's like, I've seen a lot of the concerns about people in the category saying like, oh, well, people who are supporting ingestibles, well, they want everything else to go away. I think that's an oversimplification of a little bit of where we are coming from in that. And respectfully, I think really what we're working towards that everybody really wants to see is THC regulatory frameworks in the future should have some bifurcation around milligram dosing and dosing sizes. Like, that to me seems like the most obvious avenue. But we cannot get there in the 320 days we have left. We need to get something to preserve these businesses before they go out. We need to preserve the channels that exist today that are white hat compliant and playing by the rules. And I think as we start to get outside of those primary channels we see today, that's where you have some higher risk challenges with what causes maybe some of hemp to carry the bad name of not as regulated, not living up to federal expectations, not tested the same way. And so that's a lot of where we are looking at this.
Well, there's more to it, Thomas. That's not all.
Yeah.
See, this is where it leads to the question, why is this so important to Thomas? Why is it so important to Edible Brands? We're going to tell you about that after the break, because there's the big rollout that, you know, I haven't even had a chance to talk to Thomas about, but we were know that this was in the inklings. The early onset was starting to come up when we last talked in June, but now quite a bit has happened since then. We're going to talk about that with Thomas Winston Lee, the Executive Vice President, General Manager of Edibles.com. We're going to talk about the rollout of THC beverages to the market. It's all coming. Load those THC products. That's why it's so important for this to happen. So we'll talk about that with Thomas and the whole rollout after a short break. I'm back with final questions with Thomas Winstanley, Executive Vice President, EVP, and General Manager of Edibles.com. So, first of all, in September, there was an announcement that came out for nationwide expansion of the e-commerce marketplace for hemp-derived THC products. And after a successful pilot launch in Texas, which is, I think, was what we were talking about on the last episode, that the plan is to go and service over 65% of the U.S. through direct shipping to all legal states and expand its same-day local delivery in North Carolina, Florida, and Georgia, and Texas, and also putting together a prototype store in Atlanta. Let me go back into this story. This is where I'm seeing from MSN writing about this, that you have the e-commerce site now for edibles.com and the entry point into the exploding market for hemp-based drinks and gummies. And also the plan was starting in Texas, expanding into other states like Georgia and Florida, a flagship brick-and-mortar store serving as a prototype for a new franchise coming in the summer of 2026 to Atlanta. And when you talked to Adweek, you told them that, quote, we want to be an accelerator of accessibility. We want to help connect more consumers who don't know where to start. And so here we go. The plan's been rolled out. We've talked about this for a while. And, I mean, I'm glad that for the chance we've actually been able to go and follow along the story of Edibles, you know, being backed by such a big company and moving forward. Also, by the way, privately held, not publicly traded, and moving forward now with this big rollout. Tell me about the excitement for this going in the new year.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, we've accelerated some of our plans. I'm somebody that once I see things that are working and I get excited about them, I like to work like a madman to make things happen. You know, the rollout of national shipping has been really, really great. You know, we've got our kind of core roster of brands that we continue to work with. And it's amazing to see folks in all of these states that do not have access to these products now coming to us and purchasing these products. Places that do not have cannabis regulatory policies, that do not have any permissions from, you know, policy to have them access THC. And so I love the expanded access to this category. And, you know, true to what we had hoped was that there is a level of trust and safety and security inherent in buying from a company like ours, which is great. And, you know, my original plans of having the retail open this summer, retail store is probably going to open in January is what we're running at. Because I just would love retail. I love that aspect of it. I love creating a physical experience beyond DTC e-commerce. And so, you know, what's been exciting for us is we've been able to accelerate in areas we want to accelerate in. I think our initial thesis from when we launched tended to be accurate in terms of how we wanted to build this operation. And I think what's kind of different for me is when I was in cannabis, I thought about it was almost a different consumer segment that I was speaking to and trying to reach. You know, we sold everything from flower, vapes, concentrates, you name it. And now that we're very much in this very kind of a bigger pool, but with like a much simpler audience target, which is, you know, the health and wellness side of that's why we focus a lot on edibles. I mean, we are edibles.com, sure, but functional based outcomes, you know, sleep products are top sellers. I watch the buying patterns of what people are purchasing. And when I see like people who are like, I'm going to buy 20 wild and wanna sleep chews. And a part of me wants to reach out to them and be like, are you guys, are you okay? Are you doing okay? Like, I hope this helps you get your sleep. But I think that's really heartening for me is like part of our mission where it's like, yeah, I want to look at this as nutraceutical adjacent where we cannot solve your sleep problems, but maybe this can be something that helps you more than a melatonin or magnesium, so on and so forth. So now that we've kind of unlocked some of these areas of the business, this kind of next phase, even with what's happening with recriminalization, it doesn't change our strategy over the next 6 months. We're kind of still very locked in on, we know that this could go away. We may have to pivot. I have a ton of contingency plans around that, should that reality come forward. But, you know, in the meantime, what we are doing now is like, yes, retail is going to open in January. We've got a ton of incredible brands that are coming on board now too, which I'm personally really excited about.
Oh, the brands are great. I mean, we're going to get Wild. Let me just look here. Wild, Heirloom, Wana, Cam, these excellent brands.
Yeah. I mean, and they're all cannabis adjacent brands. Like that to me was always, I love all of these brands. I've always loved these brands, even from being in cannabis. And we've kind of this is basically like the wish list of me as a consumer of like, these are my favorite. These are all my favorite things, right? What I'm excited about now is via the hemp industry, I have come across some incredible products that I had not come across in the recreational or the regulated markets. I'll just to give a shout out of some folks we're in talks with is that there's a great brand called Feels. That's a low dose hemp drive product line. Like they have a great sleep chew. They've got, you know, an incredible mint brand. Probably one of my favorites right now as a consumer is Offfield Sports, you know, essentially a sports product, infused sports product. As a guy who like loves to exercise and get stoned, like that's one of my go-tos. And what I really like about building these relationships is that we can help introduce their products to a lot more consumers. And I've used this a couple of times, but it's always important. Give the consumers what they want, and then introduce them to the things they didn't know they needed. And this is where, like, even for me, I remember back in 2018, 2019 in the cannabis industry, it was like distillate and gelatin. Like that's the best you're going to get. And what I think hemp has allowed us to do is like this wave of innovation has been, you know, products that I could never even imagined showing up are now showing up, and I'm excited about them. And so we're at that scale where now we can really do some brand building in a way that, like, when you're starting up, you don't know what you're building into. So you're kind of like, yeah, like, let's get these basic building blocks in place and then let's go build up. And so now we built a really good foundation around this thing. Now we get to build upwards. And that to me is really exciting. Like, that's really the energizing scaling of a business, which is what I love most.
So let's direct people over to the website, edibles.com. You can shop by brand, category, or outcome. Sleep, relax, uplift, and energy. Again, I didn't mention Kiva Convection is also being part of that new list of partners as well. But again, we're fans of Wana, right? We're fans of Breeze. We're fans of Can. And it's, you know, we've had all these, except for one, I think we've had everybody on either this program or on Grassroots Marketing. So, you know, you're picking the best of the best, cream of the crop. And you got chews, enhancers, drinks, so much more. So for those who want to get on here, there's also, might be a little bit after Christmas as this is published, but the thing is, for a new year, you know, what should people be doing when they go to edibles.com, how they can find out if they can get something shipped to them?
Yeah. Easy. Yeah. Throw in your zip code and you get on the site. You know, we'll tell you if we can get it to you or not. And, you know, I think different from cannabis industry, what I really like is letting people, we're trying to reach consumers who have never bought this stuff legally. So like what I really want to do is introduce, you know, the boomer generation, Gen Xers who may not have gotten into the space or have had concerns about it. We made it really simple. Shop based on the outcome. What are you looking at to get? What are you looking to get out of your THC usage? We want to simplify it.
And let's just make sure that whatever you can do to try to keep the stocks, keep stuff on the shelf, because like even once in a while, there's things that might be sold out on the site. So like, you know, the partners now, it's like, all right, we're ginning this thing up and watch. Start sending stuff to us to ship because we're going to start getting some. We're going to push some product for you. Here we go. The ride starts.
Exactly.
Yeah. Excellent. So edibles.com, one more time for that. And thank you again, Thomas Smith Stanley, Executive Vice President and General Manager of edibles.com, as always, for coming on. And, you know, Happy New Year. Thanks for being on. And as always, thanks for making time for us.
I appreciate you, Jorge. Yeah, let's check back in the new year. I'm sure things will be evolving quickly.
Sounds good. And thank you, listeners, for listening to Bump Business. We'll talk to you again soon. How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.